Hey, everybody. Welcome to this very spooky, very strange edition of the Overthink podcast. We are calling this one Stranger Think because we're just going to be talking solely about Stranger Things here today. For the lack of a better term, I am your host today. My name is Nick Gates. I host another podcast on this network called How to Read Comics. And with me, I brought some of our other podcasting compatriots. I have my co-host, Jason Helms.
Hey.
Hey. From the Topics of Great Importance podcast, Corrigan Vaughn.
Hey, hey.
And her longtime friend and co-host on many other podcasting ventures. Oh, crud. Remind me of your last name.
Keep that all.
I was like, Nick knows how to pronounce this, right?
Laterell. Laterell.
Wow, just very good. Yes, Kristen Laterell.
Kristen, yes. Laterell. Welcome, guys. We are going to jump straight into Stranger Things.
Sorry, you said guys, and it just made me think of that moment in Mighty Ducks when he says guys. Anyways.
People.
All right, people.
We are never getting through this.
Never.
So I hope you guys are in for the long haul.
You brought us back to nostalgia, which is the theme, so that's awesome.
Right? There we go. Okay.
A lot of nostalgic vibes going on with Stranger Things in general. Stranger Things 2 really laid it on hot. But I wanted to break the ice a little bit and give everybody a chance to weigh in on the question that's probably on a lot of people's minds is favorite characters. Everyone's got one. But I wanted to see who your favorite character was from season one and how that played into season two.
Hopper, always Hopper. Generally, Hopper.
Nice.
Always.
Oh my god, I just love him so much, you guys.
So did we get enough Hop in season two, Corey? Like, do you want more Hop?
Well, I always want more Hop, but I love what they did with Hop. And I think it's so important that you know first season Hopper, first second season Hopper to make sense in the way he interacts with Eleven, because it's so much wrapped up in, you know, his own daughter and, you know, his own wife and all of the stuff and that tragedy that happened in this one, to understand A, why he reacts to Eleven the way he does, why they have the Kristen, you watched the Beyond Stranger Things episodes. What is it they call it? It's like the psychic tantrum or the
psychic tantrum. Yeah.
Episode between the two of them. Like, you have to understand, like, his protective nature, what it's coming from. And also just like the terrible 80s parenting as well being the thing that like informs the way that he reacts to everything. But like, I just love Hopper. Like, so much.
Yep.
So much. And I have a million favorite characters, but I just feel like it needs to be said. Number one, the GOAT, all time, is Hopper.
Oh, you're wrong.
My heart.
You're wrong.
What?
This one goes to 11.
I mean, like, 11's great. I'm not saying I don't love 11, but okay.
I'm kidding. Argue it. I just want to start some tension. No. I mean, my favorite is 11 because she is, in many ways, a really unique character. She's so alienating in so many ways. And I think there's a temptation to let her be kind of a canvas that we can just put on whatever we want, right? And that would be what's so endearing about her. And maybe that was in season one. In season two, I kind of rooted for Eleven in spite of the Duffer brothers more than because. Mm. Like, I really don't feel like we got enough Eleven.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I didn't feel like her character arc. I didn't like her character arc. Like, it was fine. I didn't hate it. I don't think, you know, this has set feminism back 30 years. I just thought, come on.
Yeah.
I get that we're being tropey, but we can do better. So I demand more 11.
Okay.
12, even.
Oh.
No.
Dad joke.
And if you rewind this back a little bit more, you will hear, if you listen closely, you'll hear Kristen's cries of exuberance over the character Jim Hopper. Could you go in a little bit more detail to that? That would be...
As to why I love him so much?
Yeah, that would make the world a better place.
Oh, I'm excited for this.
I mean, do we have an entire podcast of which I can tell you all the reasons I love Jim Hopper?
Like, this could be a series.
I'm sorry. I misspoke when we said this is the Stranger Think podcast. This is just why we love Jim Hopper so much podcast.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, you guys.
It's a new one. Episode one. Here we go.
Yeah. Here we go. So... if we're going to start from the first season of The Reason I Loved Him, I can't even tell you. Corey and I have had this conversation before, and I don't know what it is about him that I, like, love. Like, physically, I'm, like, attracted to him, one. Two, he's, like...
It's inexplicable, just, you guys, but...
He's inexplicably hot, and I can't put my finger on why it is.
Oh, yeah, you
can. So that is, like, a separate issue. Mm-hmm. But I loved him
rocking
in...
Rocking that dad bod.
Yeah, that dad bod. I love that dad bod. But there's something about the fact that I liked the way that he grew a little bit in the first season. At first, he just was like this like gruff sheriff. He kind of thought, okay, this is the same guy, you know, that you always see. And then he ended up being like a little different than I thought. He actually really cares about the people in this town. And he really cared about finding Will. And it was like really haunting him that he couldn't find him. And then you have this, I loved at the end of the last episode of the first season when it kind of was going back and forth of them looking for Will and him, his daughter's, you know, sickness and death and all of that. And I absolutely love that so much. And so kind of getting that whole picture of who this guy was, of this just sort of like broken guy, was amazing. And then you show up in the second season and he still has this really hard exterior, but you know, like inside there, he's like just gooey a little bit, you know? And it's like real deep in there somewhere because he's really like got to shut it down. And I really love that scene after him and Eleven have that huge fight and he goes up to the door and you like see him like play with that bracelet that has from his daughter and you see him play with it. And for a second, you think he's going to apologize to her and like kind of tell her everything that he's feeling and why he lashed out at her and all this stuff, because you know the reasons that he's lashed out at her. And went during their huge fight. And at the last second, he just goes, I want this cleaned up before I get home, and leaves. And you're like, oh, damn it. Come on, Hop. Like, you know, he's doing the best he can.
Almost as if Steve is the director of Hopper, right? Just act like you don't care.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Like he's talked to him a little bit, you know?
You gotta act like you don't care.
Yeah.
And that's how Hop gets me in. I love Hop because it's like he doesn't care.
Right.
But he does care.
And I'm going to show that he too much. Because he's a bad boy. And I'm going to turn him around.
Yeah, he just loves so hard. And it's like all written on his face and also like not written on his face at the same time. But I think, and Corey, you kind of touched on it a little bit, is like the parents in this series are so terrible. Like the Wheelers are just checked out. I could not believe that Lucas's mom like believed him when he was like, I'm going to go hang out with Dustin. And I'm like, come on, that was like literally the worst lie I've ever heard, you know?
But they just don't figure they're getting into that much trouble.
Of all the parents, to me, I feel like Hop is actually, while making some huge mistakes and really kind of kind of fumbling his way through it, at the same time, like he sees Eleven for kind of like who she is, right? So he knows when she's lying. He actually cares that she is lying. He cares where she was when he didn't know where she was, you know? And they hash it out and they have this huge fight, but that's kind of how those relationships should be. Like, you should fight with your parents because they should care that you were gone all day when you shouldn't have been, and you don't, you know, adhere to the rules that he set down. Whether or not those are good rules to begin with, you know, that's different. But to me, I'm like, he's actually one of the better parents in this show because he actually cares about her and what happens to her. And so I loved that. And I loved how he caring he even ends up being for like Will, who's not his kid. But that scene at the very beginning when he tells Joyce, he's like, if anything happens, you call me first, you know? And he's just become, and all the kids are even like, oh, I tried to call Hop. He wasn't around. So he's become this like central character to all their lives, which I love, because first season he was kind of, you know, it was like the adults were kind of in the dark, didn't know what was going on. And the kids were doing their own thing. And they're all these like separate pods of people. And by the second season, they're all kind of coming together, and Hop's sort of at the middle of like, okay, well, he's not there. Well, what are we going to do now? And I guess we have to figure this out on our own. I love how he's.
Yeah, we talked earlier too about even the moment where like Mike is so mad at him.
Oh my God, I love that scene.
You know, and then eventually like Hop sort of like just calms him down and holds him and is like, you're okay. You're okay. Yeah. Like He's really got that kind of parental thing where he's not always the friend, you know, and he doesn't always do it right.
Care about that.
Yeah, like he's really just like his instinct is to protect and to, you know, like just be there.
Right. And that's what's so great about him too, is that he does not give a shirt about what these kids think about him, whether they like him, whether they hate him, he's like, I don't care. Like, yeah. I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
They alive?
I do what I
then
think is right.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
He degaffs so hard.
Yeah. He does. Oh, yeah. He degaffs. Yeah.
He degaffs so hard, guys.
He's got a binary, like, answer to everything. And so, he, like, when he has to deal with these, like, huge emotions, it's either he's just on or off.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that scene with Mike, he's just like, well, I can only apologize to you and just give you a big bear hug. Like, I just have to, I can only just hold, you are going in so many more directions with your emotions that I can deal with. And that's why also him and Eleven make such a great duo, is they're both like, they'd rather be silent, you know, they'd rather not have the conversations. And that last scene where they're driving towards their certain doom, that 5-minute car ride, which that scene was just so good. And it was just like Hopper's emotions were just boiled down to just as simple as he could make it.
Yeah.
Because that was the common denominator, is they both, you know, Eleven hasn't really spoken many words. Like, you can see her vocabulary grow by the end of the season, but they get each other on a very, very simple level. And they're just, it's such an endearing duo of characters. That's what,
when I saw that birth certificate that said,
did you cry?
Hopper.
I cried.
My heart grew 3 sizes. Yeah. It was amazing.
Straight up.
You guys, here's the thing. I spent, and this is probably not an exaggeration, although I exaggerate about a lot of things, I probably spent 85% of this series with my hand over my heart going, oh, because there were so many moments like that where you were like,
But were you doing that by your daughter's hospital bedside, watching on your phone?
I know.
Everyone's staring at you. No. And I'm like, shut up. No, you're crying. Because that was my week.
You were emotionally compromised, Jason, is what you're saying here.
Yeah. Well, and also very public. Everybody's, you know, just walking by, doctors, nurses, just kind of wandering through the room as
I'm fine.
I'm just ignoring you.
So have you guys watched Stranger Things 2 yet? I just... Don't
worry. See, okay, so his name is Dart, right? And...
No, but like, also, Kristen, the saying, and everybody sort of brought it up, though, but like the pairing between the two of those and how, like, great that is. Mm-hmm. I feel like the pairing off in this season was one of the things that, like, really... helped to emotionally pull you along too, because you have, like, whether it's like Lucas and Max, or it's Dustin and Steve, or Hopper and Eleven, like, and of course, Bob Newby and Joyce, you know, all these like pairings that you have in this, I feel like emotionally are really sort of central to how you feel about everything that happens in this entire season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How long did you think Bob was going to be a bad guy?
Oh, the whole time.
Yeah, totally convinced. Totally convinced that he was the spy.
Yeah, me too.
When he died, Keo turned and he just went, well, I guess they'll never find out he's a spy.
But we know.
We know. I thought it all the way up until they got to the Hawkins lab. And I just assumed there'd be like a look between him and Doc Owens. Mm-hmm. And when there wasn't, I was like,
oh,
wait. Like, so they really. Bob just like. Normal?
Like, he's really just like a good dude? Oh no, he's, they're gonna kill him, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, and then you Mr. Arnold it down to the basement. I'm like, oh. Yeah,
that's Mr. Arnold. That's exactly what I said to Keo. I was like, oh no, hold on to your butt.
This dude, Jurassic Park was all over this, because that, and then all the part when Steve is in the middle of the junkyard and Lucas sees the other Demodog comp, I went, two sides!
Yes!
Clever girl.
Clever
girl. Well, and that entire, I just felt like the entire Bob in the hospital thing was just all straight up Jurassic Park. And I was I don't know if this was the same for you guys, but this is probably the scariest part of the entire season was Bob in the hospital. Like, entire time.
That whole episode was just straight fear.
Yeah.
Straight terror.
Yeah. Like, my heart did not stop. It was basically like fear, 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 like a moment of relief, sadness. That was the entire episode.
Well, because not only Bob, but then Will got super creepy that episode too, man.
Yeah.
What about backing up just a hair before that episode?
Yeah.
Because we get that great cliffhanger of the Demodog's hand coming up over the pit.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, cliffhanger. Yeah. And you're like, oh, yeah, Stranger Things cliffhanger. I know how to handle these. Next episode, I got it covered, guys. And then we get a fairly short episode, but an entire episode of Elle visiting Chicago.
The bottle episode.
And then back. So it was nice, for one, that we got a cliffhanger. It's nice, too. I kind of like that we got a bottle episode. But I had some issues, and I want to hear y'all's thoughts on it.
Oh, we're talking about the episode that should be stricken from the record. Yeah, correct?
The Lost Sister episode.
The Lost Sister episode. That was rough. I thought it was going to add more to the story than it was. And it took me a minute to realize that we had actually gone back in time. And that was probably the most interesting thing that happened that episode, is when Eleven is using her abilities to kind of poke back and see what's going happening to her friends back in Hawkins.
Okay. Yeah.
And you realize, oh, okay, in the timeline, this is the point of where we just left off on the episode before. And so I thought that was the hard part I had for the whole thing, was thinking that we just left off on this cliffhanger and, oh, by the way, Eleven's in Chicago. While the Demogorgons are trying to come up out of a pit, she's just on a bus to Chicago. So the timing wasn't right. The story was fine. Like, the story is fine, and they'll obviously probably expand on that later in the future in a season 3, probably. But
it just felt like they shoved like an Orphan Black episode in the middle of Stranger Things. It was just like, yeah. Well, oh, okay. Like, I feel like I'm kind of interested, but I don't care in the context of this series.
It would be a lot better if they took the cold open from episode 1, where you meet 8.
Collie.
Yeah.
And take that and put that as the coda at the end of season 2, and you'd be fine. And you'd be like, oh my gosh, she's got a sister. Like, let's look at that. You could still do the whole mama part. You could do her talking to Eleven, talking to her mom and finding out that there were others. But yeah, I think you put another show inside of another show and didn't really develop it.
Yeah. And it's hard to separate Eleven from the other kids, you know, where it's like, I do want to know what that backstory is. I'm interested in it, but I want her to be interacting with the rest of the kids throughout this thing. And I mean, I love that eventually you get like a joyful reunion between her and Will that is obviously meaningful because they've been separated and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, there was something about giving her like a new posse and only for the course of one episode that just to me was like, I'm not invested enough in this.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's like, it's weird because, you know, when you have a bottle episode, it usually serves a purpose within like a series as like a filler in a sense, you know, for budgetary reasons, for, you know, a script that got scrapped, like whatever the case may be.
Right.
But I'm like, why did they put this in the middle of Stranger Things? They had this planned. They couldn't have made, I don't know.
They had lots of money and lots of time. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It seemed to me just like an extreme way for her because, you know, at the end of the last episode, when she's trying to close the gate, she's like channeling that time she spent with Collie. So for me, it seemed like a really extreme way for her to learn how to channel that anger in like a bigger way than she'd ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that was like the most that I got out of that time was like, yeah, she learned how to do that. But to me, there also seemed to be like a limit to that. Whereas Collie was like out for revenge and Eleven was like, super my jam. Like, I thought maybe I could hang with that, but I think I can't. And so then to me, it was a real interesting sort of thing how at the, you know, when Collie kind of gets in her head and shows her Papa and she's like trying to get her, I feel like on her level of like, no, like, remember what they did to us. Like, you want this too. To then at the end have Eleven like still sort of give in to that like anger and hate that Collie like kind of brought out in her. So that was so interesting where she like at one point like kind of shuns that way of life of like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to go be with my friends and help them and whatever they're doing. But at the same time, like that was still the only way that she could close it. Like, I for sure thought this was going to be like an Expecto Patronum moment. She's like, no, I'm not going to like turn to the dark side here. I'm going to try.
Yeah, I'm going to summon the love in my heart, you know,
summon the love in my heart. Like, I kind of thought, cause it seemed that she'd sort of turned away from that. And so that was like a whole weird thing where I'm like, So what was her deal? Like, other than maybe setting up for season three where her sister's going to have a bigger part or something, maybe? Like, it just seemed extreme.
That was actually the only thing that saved it for me. I liked that she used the anger. I liked that she learned something from it and grew as a character. Because what I didn't like about that episode was the things you talked about as well. But the story arc of that episode fits like an after-school special. Like, the girl goes, hangs out with the wrong crowd. And then she learns that she should have stayed home and just with the people that she knows.
Yeah.
And the lesson is, don't go out, don't express yourself, don't expose yourself to something new, especially if you're a girl.
Right.
Because the world is scary and you are fragile. And I just freaking hate that message. Yeah. And I didn't want them to do that. So I'm glad that they didn't quite. They kind of narrowly averted it at the end. But I don't feel like that's a trope that we particularly needed them to, you know, right, get back, sure, into for our nostalgia. That's not something I enjoy anyway.
Yeah.
And Eleven's also not, she is an adolescent, right? But she's not a typical adolescent who's like rebelling.
Right.
She's a prisoner. She's been a prisoner her whole life. And Hop, even with all his good intentions, no matter how much I love him, has kept her a prisoner for a year.
Yeah, totally.
He is a man who kept a 12-year-old locked in a cabin in the woods for a year.
Right.
There are extenuating circumstances, agreed. But we can't deal with it as though, well, and then she went through puberty.
Yeah.
Like, she needs, season three needs to be Elle working stuff out. Yeah. She's got some issues to go through.
Yeah.
And I want to be part of that arc.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That brings up one of the big themes that I had to jot down when it triggered my dome. But this idea of these kids losing the years of their childhood, and that this season was, I guess, the B story arc is them trying to get back those year, that year that they lost in season one, when they had to go through all that. They finally kind of got back to normal, and they're playing video games at the arcade. They're dressing up. I think the perfect example was when they're all dressed up as Ghostbusters and they go to school and nobody else is dressed up.
Did it. Yeah.
Oh, you guys, I felt that in my soul. And,
did we like miss something here? I'm like, yeah, you did. Yeah, you missed all of last year. Yep. You poor kids lost your innocence last year, and now you're just trying to hold on to it.
Right.
And, you know, with the bottle episode with Eleven is her trying to grow up too fast, and she realizes that she doesn't need that. She needs her friends. She needs people her own age and people to friends and family to, you know, grow. So that was kind of a big one that I saw that was just kind of bookended by the beginning of the Halloween dress up and with Eleven's experience. And then finally with the dance too, which is another feel good, trying to keep those kids.
That is legitimately the hardest I cried during the entire season. Was Gaten Matarazzo sitting there crying on the bleachers. I could not, like, my heart could not handle it. Oh. And I love that during the Beyond Stranger Things episode, they're talking about this. And I think it's Ross Duffer is like, I looked over and, like, our dolly grip getting the shot of Dustin sitting there, you know, on the bleachers was crying. He's like, he's this big old manly man and he's got, like, tears that he's trying to wipe away from his face, you know. But I think that exactly... So two things that I have thoughts on this is that I think both of you hit on, like, I feel like, Nick, you're looking at this how the Duffer brothers probably intended that 11 episode to be, is like, oh, it's like they're, you know, going, she realizes she doesn't need this, like, she doesn't need to grow up super fast, she needs to go back to her friends. And I think that's also related to the weird sort of worship of Barb, too, that, like, a lot of the time, like, you know, this justice for Barb things. And in a sense, I get, like, she didn't deserve to die. Right. But she's also like the character who tries to like kind of slut shame her friend and like really has these very regressive views and being like, remember who you are, Simba. You know, like she's just like her entire character is actually kind of awful. If you really think about who she is, did she deserve to die? Should people have paid more attention to her? Yes, absolutely. Yes,
she deserved to die.
Yes, she deserved to die.
Do it again.
It's the reversal of the actual 80s movie formula, right? Where it's actually the like sexually active teen who's the one who's supposed to die. And instead it's the one who's like, you know, giving her a hard time about it. But so, like, I think they kind of intended this to be like a, no, she's, you know, she needs to retain some of that innocence and not go, you know, full revenge, full hate, all of that stuff. At the same time, it does sort of reinforce this idea of, you know, it's very after school, especially. It's very much that sense of like, oh, you know, don't venture out there and become a bad girl, Evan. You know, go stick with stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to.
Jokes that you're used to. don't go making phony calls. Yeah.
Exactly. So I forgot the other point that I was going to make about that. So sorry. Anyway, Jason was saying something about Lucas.
It's all about me.
Also,
all about me all the time, always.
Lucas is a thing that I want to talk about in general. So tell me what you were thinking about Lucas.
Maybe you just want to talk about it then, but. Okay, so going from Ghostbusters to the dance, that's what got me thinking about Lucas. Mm-hmm. Because Ghostbusters was the first time that we saw Lucas kind of as a character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunately him saying, by the way, guys, I'm black.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad someone noticed.
Yeah, no, Lucas is a black character in this season.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
No, last season he was barely Winston from Ghostbusters.
Right.
You know, this season... he's saying he doesn't want to be Winston from Ghostbusters, literally.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was great. I think that was really self-aware of them that they did that. And Lucas had a really exciting arc. I was so happy to see him be an interesting and kind of, I thought, fully fleshed out character.
Yeah. Like, he has a family, which is amazing. I mean,
love his sister. Love
his sister. His sister was incredible. Everything.
Yeah, like, honestly. She is such a brat, and I love her so much. Like, that he has a family, and, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with there being, like, you know, the sort of stereotypical, if you will, black family in something. I think you represent black families however they are. But I love that because of where they live in Hawkins, like, it's just a middle-class family, and that we get to see all of their thing, because we didn't get to see that in the first one. We see like everybody's family and we never get to see his, which is so the typical way that like a black character, especially when they're kids.
We didn't see Dustin's family either. That's true. We didn't know Dustin. I didn't know Dustin just had a mom.
Yeah, I guess he just has a mom. But this is such like a typical way that this tends to happen in things. And I think of like, did you all see It?
The new one?
The new one. Okay, well.
Ass.
Nobody saw it. Nobody
well, saw it. There you go.
Okay. Well,
it's like the most popular movie ever. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's hilarious because like I teach pop culture and like trying to find common ground amongst my students that they've like all seen something because like it's so fractured the way people experience pop culture now is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone saw It. So I can talk about It. They all saw that. But like that's one of the things that was a problem with that is that, you know, there's the one black boy in that as well, and he is sort of deprived of all the backstory and everything that the miniseries and the story gave to him, you know, and they just sort of replace it with some, you know, he's barely there in this thing. But all that to say, in this they give him that backstory, they really flesh him out as a character, and that he also experiences racism, which I think is like key, you know, that the stepbrother is so vehemently against him. And while he doesn't necessarily say it, you're like, we know why he doesn't like Lucas, you know, and to have this show, you know, address that, to be like, this isn't some weird utopia of multiculturalism where everyone gets along and all is well, like to be like, let's just acknowledge that this is 1984 in, you know, the Midwest, and he's going to experience these kinds of things. I thought that that was just brilliant, that it wasn't like overdone in this, but that they really gave him the full experience of being a black kid in a white town in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And that was, to me watching it, I was like, yes, yes, thank you. Thank you very much for this kind of thing. Because I was that kid. I was the black kid in the white town in the 1980s. So I'm like, I get this. I'm so with him.
Way to avoid the adjective nerdy. Yeah. Because, hey, I knew you in middle school.
Yeah, okay. We don't need to revisit those times. Yeah, you've seen me Lucas at my nerdiest.
Lucas's story arc, too, is so, so good. And you see it in his companionship and how the companionship changes of him and him. Like at the beginning of the season, you know that for the last year and probably always, him and Dustin were just like this. They were in like Flynn with each other. They were a awesome duo, cracking jokes. You know, they're trying to, you know, bolster each other. And then it shifts then you have the girl that brings them apart. Max comes in, and to watch how that all plays out, and how they use that as the opportunity to really show more to Lucas's character, and that he's not a goof. It was just really good. They did that really, really well without singling out Dustin's character too much and not being like, well, he's just a total goober. And, you know,
yeah.
they could have done that very easily, but they put Lucas and Dustin kind of on the same level. It was anybody's shot, but they really developed that out really well. And you really,
and I also say, just the thing with Lucas too, is just also why I feel a distinct kinship with that kid, is that I also just feel like I was always, this is also why I like Gus in Psych.
Yes. Oh, love Gus.
Is that I was always that kid who was like, guys, this is a shitty idea. We should not be doing this. This is like, we're going to get ourselves killed or whatever. But at the end of the day was also the one in the dumpster. You know, like that was me, the one who was just like, this is a bad idea, but I need to do this so that we don't all get, okay, yeah, no, all right, I'll do it, but I'm going to lodge my complaint formally with all of you. And
if it's good for the party,
you know, and I felt like it was, and the rules he bent, like telling Max about things, it was like, he knew he needed to like do this. If it's good for the party, I may go against it, but yeah, I feel like I really relate to that.
As someone who's known Corey for over 2 decades, I can vouch for that. I think you ended up in a dumpster too, probably because of something stupid I wanted to do.
100%. Awesome. I have been in many figurative dumpsters as a result of Chasen's or Ben's antics. So there you go. This is, I love Lucas.
Thanks.
I think Lucas is great.
Thanks, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's keep going down this character train then. So we've talked about Hopper, Eleven, Lucas. Who else stands out huge to you guys in season two? You want to talk Steve?
Steve.
You got to talk Steve.
Got to talk Steve.
Because Corey knew me in high school, and I was a bit of a Steve, as you might imagine.
Did you revert back to some different stage?
Fine, I was a Dustin, but I want to talk about Steve anyway.
Not Steve.
Jason was not Steve. Jason will never be Steve.
I mean, I'm not buying any of that. So you have a show on this network and where you like talk about comic books in depth. So I'm pretty
as Steve
sure
would.
You were not a Steve.
That precludes you.
I was hardcore a Dustin,
but
I was definitely
Jason did use a lot of that Farrah Fawcett hairspray though. So there was that.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
I had hair at one point.
I have been lectured by Jason on the origins and capabilities of mind flayers. So,
definitely
a Dustin.
Yeah,
true.
Definitely.
And that was last week.
I mean, if anybody was a Steve here, it's me.
Yeah, it's my ladder. still out there just eschewing pants, being a Steve. So, okay, Steve, end of last season, I'm like, I hate this guy. Why did Nancy end up with him? Like, I kind of came around. I kind of came around a little bit. But the fact that Nancy ended up with him, I was like, no, hard no. And also, I respect you Duffer Brothers for doing it because I didn't see it coming. Like, way to go. And this season, I fell in love with Steve so hard.
Yeah, oh,
he
God.
He is my everything. He is the best babysitter in the world.
Yeah. I love that Kristen said to me earlier today that the best thing about Steve is that he always does the opposite thing that you think he's going to do. You
know? I'm telling you, they did it on purpose. And it was interesting talking. I listened to, again, to the Stranger Beyond Stranger Things. Yeah. And he was supposed to end up like Billy.
Yeah,
he was supposed to be like the asshat that everyone hated. But I honestly think it's whatever
the
that guy's
actor,
name is.
Yeah.
The actor came in,
you know,
and was like so charming.
Junior.
Yeah, Jean-Ralphio Jr. came in.
Senior.
Or no, Senior.
Senior.
He came in and just like, they took it on such a different way, because you're right, even at the end of the first season, I didn't hate that he ended up with Nancy, because he ended up being like so nice and great. And you're like, oh, like, yeah, he was an idiot for a little bit, but
he's a teenage boy.
Stupid choices,
so
and he came around and...
Yeah.
And then this season, even I continue to underestimate him, even though he like showed his colors in the last season and was like a stand-up guy. And then even in this one, I was like, oh man, when Nancy breaks his heart, he's gonna go off the rails and he's gonna be such a jerk. And then, you know, he's like hanging out with another, like going to the track. She's
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you should go with, he's like, you should go with Jonathan. Like, it's okay. Like, yeah. I'm a good bait. I'm going to hang out. And I'm just like, Steve. Yeah.
He full on backs so off. Like, and that is, you never see that. He's not out there with a boombox over his
head. Not with a face and hair like that. Faces and hairs like that do not back down.
Yeah. I mean, really. Guys. It's, oh, I love that so much. He really is unexpected.
So, Corey, let me get this straight. Barb is a slut shamer. Barb deserved to die, but Steve, who literally is writing on the wall.
I distinctly said she did not deserve to die.
Literally writing on the wall. No, he gets a pass. It's that hair. I understand. That hair always gets a pass.
I mean,
I feel like you're conflating my opinion with Kristen's, and I find that to be sexist and offensive. So,
I appreciate that.
I very distinctly said Barb does not deserve to die. But also, you know, Steve just lived longer to redeem himself.
Yeah. And can we talk about the fact that he picked Dustin up for the dance? And when they drove up, Love is a Battlefield was playing. And I thought my heart was going to literally pop out of my chest. Like,
this Dustin and Steve combo is such a, like, that scene where they're walking down the tracks, flinging raw meat over their shoulders and talking about girls. Like,
can you please tell me, you guys... You guys have all seen Sing Street, right?
What?
I have.
Boys. Yeah, I know you.
I don't think I've heard of it. What is it?
You've never heard of Sing Street. It was nominated for an Oscar, you guys. Get on top of this.
Sing
Street.
It's on Netflix. Get it together.
On Netflix. Get it together. Irish movie made by the dude who made Once. It's brilliant. One of my favorite movies of all time. But it's Kristen, you'll at least relate to this, that Dustin and Steve are very much like the brothers in Sing Street. That is just like seeing those kinds of relationships in stuff. Like, I mean, it warms your heart and gives you hope that like dudes can be more than just like toxic masculinity and terribleness, that you're just like, they can like, they can be emotional with each other and like, you know, get their feelings out and support each other. And it's cool. And I mean, that's also kind of what's so important, like as male as Stranger Things is, which can be a problem. I also think it's so important that like their friendships are so healthy, you know, that they like they fight each other on things and so forth. But like at the end of the day, it's about like guys who have learned to be emotional with one another.
What I loved so much about this season, and that's what I love so much about last season, but I really feel like this season it came to this point where they, last season they, you're right, I think we talked about it earlier, they all kind of lost their childhood, right? Their innocence, it kind of, you know, it kind of all fell apart. But before that, it was all so easy to be friends.
Yeah.
So this year's gone by, you know, you have Mike, who's like emo Mike, you know, and hates everything. He's acting out and he's being terrible and he's sort of being an jerk to everybody.
Yeah.
And you have Will, who's, you know, crazy.
Who's,
you know, he's got
who's literally missed like
this thing that's
3-4 months of his life and he's only like 12, so that's a pretty big percentage of your life.
That's a good chunk of his formative years,
you know. He's trying to the other two have just seen some stuff right. And so, but for me, both seasons they just yell at each other. But they always come back to like they have this very strict code that they've decided to adhere to. So I love it. Even at the very end, Dustin's like, you know what? You're right. I broke the code. Whatever. You know, he's like, so if you want to kick me out. And Lucas is like, man, come on. Like, obviously not going to do that. First of all, that's dumb. You know, so it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. I wish that we could all be so lucky to have these friends that we have these like knockdown, drag out, like screaming fights. I feel like regularly they scream at each other.
Oh, yeah.
But then at the end of the day, it's like they're there for you and they stand by you. And, I thought it was such a beautiful picture of what, you know, friendships can be, of like not just giving up on people and walking away, of like, no, like, you know, you're my brother. We're going to see this through.
And that moment where they're trying to bring Will's memories back and Mike tells the story of like, do you remember the like first time that we met? You know, it was kindergarten and like tells this whole thing, you know, and he's like really emotional about it. And it's just trying to like pull his friend out that way. Like, it's such an extreme way to develop healthy emotional friendships. But also, I think that's just such a great template, you know, as that's when kids watch these kinds of things and they see these kinds of friendships. And I hope that's what they want to emulate. Like when I was a kid and I watched Now and Then religiously, you know, I knew that was the kind of friendship I wanted to have with women. And I have had those kinds of friendships. And so I hope that younger boys watch Stranger Things and they're like, this is, as I grow up, this is what I look at adolescence like. And that's the kind of thing that I want to emulate and not like, you know, the douchebags and popular culture that generally you tend to see, you know?
Yeah.
It's really also a story of instead of just friendships, it's about more of like found family. It's yeah. deeper than just friendship.
Right.
Whereas friendship would be the scenes in the beginning of season one, episode one, where they're sitting around playing Dungeons and Dragons. That's friendship. But the stuff that they get into over the course of the whole time that we've been watching is more of a family. And I think they hit on that with all the duos that they put together. But then the scene where they're all trying to get Will's memory back is, you know, it's his real family. And then you've got Mike telling him how much, you know, hey, remember when I met you in kindergarten and I said, would you be my friend? And you're just like, yeah. And so, it's like super simple. And,
yeah.
And, I think there's a stream of that out in pop culture now of trying to form, about families that are found versus
right.
just friendships. And I think it's a really cool, message to get out there because, with the fragmented nature of our society now, you almost have to dive deeper in than you ever had before.
Right.
Cursory friendships may not mean as much anymore. And so you gotta have to like make a family wherever you go, which world would be a better place if we all kind of worked like that. But
right. Yeah.
That's hopeful until we find out that Dustin has finally found his family in a group of men's rights activists. Like
no!
I was literally thinking this, like, found family, such a beautiful story. And then I was like, well, but not all found families.
Unless.
Some of them are toxic and awful. Yeah, like, no. it also matters what you're gathering
100%
around.
True. Yeah, exactly.
It's found families are part of the reason for the fragmentation.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right on that, you know. And that's what I hope this steers towards is, you know, the healthier version of that and not the... male entitlement. Yeah. And I think that is one of the risks you do run with the Dustin storyline, you know, and Nancy saying like, you know, the girls right now are terrible, but they'll come around, you know, like you do run the risk of that, you know, villainizing the girls, you know, and like they don't understand you're the nice guy that they just don't get yet. They don't know they want a nice guy yet, you know? Yeah. So there's certainly the risk that that can be how this is interpreted. And I hope that's not, you know, what people take from it, because that's certainly the sort of toxic attitude that I think most of the pop culture of when we were all growing up, like the 80s and 90s and 2000s, kind of ran with.
Well, I feel like that she outright lied. It wasn't just going to be in a couple years they would come around. It was going to be like 10 years before they come around. Just kidding.
Yeah.
That's a bad joke. That is a very bad joke.
How dare you? I will say, okay, we should probably go into like something plot-based, but just before we do move on to anything in that area, I just feel like we just need a moment to reflect on Bob Newby.
Bob Newby.
Everybody go around the circle and say what you loved most about Bob Newby.
Yeah, can we just,
I'll start. I loved his knowledge of BASIC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that was amazing, because I remember learning BASIC as a wee one. I was like, are you serious? That's what's good. And again, this is part of the Jurassic Parkness of this, right? It's just the like, you know, I know this, you know, like
they fixed Jurassic Park because he didn't go to some virtual reality bizarre OS
this
thing.
This is what
he used BASIC, kind of, but you know.
Yeah, but legitimately, I mean, it was closer to the actual thing. I love Bob Newby because he didn't question when he was told not to question, and he just accepted the game and he went along with it. And then the moment that he realized, like, wait, like, I love when they pull up and Joyce is pulled off the road and he goes like, what's Jim doing here? His truck gets on the side of the road and you're like, holy crap, he made it this entire time and he legitimately did not realize what was happening.
When they hop into the tunnels and he's like, yeah. Oh, are we in Will's map? How did he know this? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, like, Bob.
Bro, you're too good for this world.
He is.
He was.
Yeah.
Much too good. My favorite thing about Bob was his confidence. Mm. Like, he... You could tell he came, obviously, and obviously from the way that Hopper talked about him and from the way that he even talked about his, you know, he's like, but look at me now. Like, now I'm dating Joyce Byers, you know, and which was like so endearing. But I loved how he knew things that, you know, he's like, I work at, and he knows a lot about computers. And when he went over to the house with the brain teasers, you know, and he was like, I could teach him. And she's like, no, like, not now. He's like, I mean, they don't call me Bob the Brain for nothing, you know, and he's like. And then when he's going to go down and, you know, to reboot the computers and he's like, okay, I can do this. So it's fine. You know, and you're like, look at him. Like he was able to like, he's almost like that, like in that lesson of like, it gets, you know, it gets better. There's life after all of these people torment you when it's horrible and you hate it.
Yeah. And then he's the future of those boys.
He's like the great ending story of those guys who turn out and be like, yeah, no, but look how freaking smart I am and I know all this stuff and I can help you. And yeah, he like plays the game because he's like, oh, I can solve it. And then when he does, and you're like, you have the like knowledge to back up that confidence. He's not one of those guys that's like, man, I'm the best, and he's not. And he's like, really is the best. Yeah. Canada being so great and I miss him already. And it's so sad.
Why did you take it from us?
I was waiting for the scene where they come out at the end and they say, we have the technology. We can rebuild him.
Oh, no. I think you just predicted season 3.
It would have been the time. It would have been the place. No. I mean, if it was going to happen.
Oh, man.
You don't know. This may not, be.
On the subject of Bob's death, though, can we talk about how, like, super bloody this season was?
Yeah, that was insane.
I actually felt a little sick. I had to look away because it was, like, all up in there. They were, like, all
It's
up
the
in
sounds. Place. It's the sounds for me of the.
Yeah.
You know, when people are eating. I mean. Demogorgons are eating things. Ugh.
I'm so always gross. Lost in trying to figure out how the mechanics of their petal faces work. Like,
right?
It was terrifying at first,
right?
But the more I see them eat things, the more I'm like, does that work? Like,
well, that's the thing. It's clearly not like, that efficient because they don't like tear something to shreds and like eviscerate it immediately. It's like it takes
suck on it.
I think it's like
they suck on it. Yeah,
with like a teething, it's
like a lamprey,
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all
right, you guys are talking too fast. I got to get this down in this new biology page book. So let me just.
Also, I just feel like we've given short shrift to Joyce, who I also really love, just dude. Because.
Oh, before we move on to Joyce, because I'm.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Joyce is she's awesome. She is so good in this. The little Sean, like, so not Bob Newby, but Sean Astin. Easter egg they had when they're following the map and he comes to become where the X is.
What's at the X?
Okay, and they say, he's like, what's the X? Pirate's treasure?
Oh, so good. So good. Made my day.
I turned.
Oh, thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, so good.
By the way, have you guys seen the video, the very inexplicable video for Corey Feldman's song Ascension Millennium?
Yes.
Is he wearing like the weird gloves and stuff?
Yeah, like the full Michael Jackson garb and all that. But that Sean Astin comes out with like the map and like points to the little X on it. Like he's gotten a lot of mileage out of that role. Let's just say that.
He's got some pretty iconic roles. Like he doesn't just show up. He's always there.
Yeah, like Rudy, Samwise, whatever his name is in Goonies.
Goonie.
Goonie number one.
Yeah, the Goonie number one. Sean Astin's got a great cameo on the show Con Man. Alan Tudyk's show Con Man.
Yeah.
And they have just such a Sean Astin plays Sean Astin in that, and it's just it's 15 minute web episode that you got to look up. It's great if you haven't seen it. But
well, and one more thing too on Sean Astin, the Beyond Stranger Things, they were talking about how he like also just sent in a tape. Of his audition?
Like he was a fan and he just said
the Duffer brother, or was it Duffer Brothers that were saying? They were going through the tapes and all of a sudden, like he's like, all of a sudden it was freaking Samwise Gamgee was like auditioning for this role. And we were like,
and they said they were like, they were like, he wasn't supposed to be this likable and he wasn't supposed to have this big a part, but they fell so in love with Sean Astin that they were like, expand it. This has gotta be a thing. Yeah. So
there's a great the nerd, another podcast to listen to other than this one. It's great. Is Chris Hardwick's Nerdist podcast, and he interviews the Duffer Brothers, and they were saying that Stranger Things season one was like a beacon that was sent up, and like all these creatives came to them to offer to, you know, that's how you get the Sean Astin in it. And they had a bunch of different director, the three different directors for this season too. And it was, what's his
Andrew
name?
Andrew Stanton.
Andrew Stanton and Sean Levy.
Sean Levy, yeah.
Yeah. And you get these great creatives to come in, and they were comparing it to Star Wars, where Star Wars episode 4 was just like this pulled up by their bootstraps movie that everyone just fell in love with. And then for all the subsequent movies, it's just been this beacon of creativity for people to jump in and do something really, really cool. So I think that that idea really shines with the polish that they put on this season. It rode the line between fan service and really doing something new really well. And that was the goal. I know there would have been a huge outcry if that was not achieved.
Yeah. And that's like so important. I think that can't be overstated, just that when you're doing something that is so heavily informed by nostalgia and relies on nostalgia in a lot of ways, to not do that in a way that just feels like you're constantly winking at the audience. You know, like I constantly think about this in terms of the second of the new Star Trek movies, right? That basically is just like Wrath of Khan over again, you know, that they're constantly doing things to say like, hey, fans, we know that you like this. So here's a thing that happened already and it's happening again. And doing that with anything nostalgic, like you can really go so far overboard in terms of being like, here's a toy you recognize, a commercial you recognize, a this. And they walk that line so well in Stranger Things of being like, this is, here's the feeling. You get the feeling of what it was like in this era without us constantly having to like punch you in the face with like, remember? and that really is part of what makes it so great.
I was on high alert for that. And in the first episode, I was feeling it a little bit with all of the licensed tracks that they use, all the 80s music that they used instead of like their own soundtrack. And that threw me off a bit, but everything else was fine. So my radar went off for sure. And I was like, hey, it's 1984. Hey, did you get that it was 1984? It's 1984. Right. By the way, it's 1984.
It's like the establishing shot. Yeah. You know, you give it a little credit, the little leeway the first episode.
It went away after about 20 minutes and everything was fine.
Yeah.
Everything
and I think it reached perfection with Sean Astin, who is just this nostalgia machine because you want to put all those other roles on him. But also with Paul Reiser, who, every day he was at home, so great. Sick from school, all you watch is Mad About You.
Yes.
On continual reruns.
Whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah.
He just really walked that line so well, where you knew he was evil. You knew he was evil, but he's Paul Reiser and you want to trust him and you want him not to be evil. And then he turns out to be okay. And it's so good. It feels so good to love
him. I mean, that's, again, they do this with the whole series, is that like people generally aren't who you think they're going to be. Yeah. It's not as simple as what you see in the beginning of any given character, you know?
Well, that's the thing.
Except for Callie, apparently.
Because remember I was telling you with Billy and Max, I was convinced. I'm like, okay, well, I wonder what theirs. They obviously came also from something happened in California where there was this shadow dimension, you know? And I'm like thinking the same thing. And then it's like, he's just a sociopath sort of.
Yeah.
And is racist, which is like very
normal. He comes from a bad family. He's a bad guy.
Yeah. You know. And it's like, oh, I forget. This is like a show about people also, like normal people. And so like even that surprised me because I was like reading way too far into him when he was just like a normal person who was a dick.
Yeah.
And then these other people who was reading way too far into him, like, oh, they're, you know, master plan of what they're planning. And it's like, actually, they're just nice.
Yeah.
Ish people.
I was waiting for Billy to turn into a vampire. So,
right. From Lost Boys.
He had the whole Lost. He had the whole Lost Boys vibe. Yep. Lost Boys for sure.
Yeah.
Anybody else shipping Billy and Mrs. Wheeler like really hard?
They're both horrible.
I'm very worried about Mrs. Wheeler. I think she's an alcoholic.
I love that.
Yeah.
She had a glass of wine in every scene, and it was.
I was, What was I was just watching something the other day that was making the comparison that they were like, oh, it was okay, anyways, it was something that like a comedian was talking about that like now people are so uptight. Oh, it was who were we watching the comedian the other day, Kristen? You were with
Jack
me.
Whitehall.
Jack Whitehall, that was it. He was like England versus America. That like in America we're like, I'm really worried about so and so. They had 3 glasses of wine with dinner tonight. And he's like, in England, it's like they had 3. Like, gosh, were they sick? Is there something wrong with them? Why couldn't they drink more? So that's like your attitude towards her. I'm like, it's the 80s. Like, a glass of wine constantly in your hand? That's normal.
She's a health nut. She wasn't smoking inside the house.
That's a good point. So I'm saying that you got to watch out for that secondhand smoke.
Just watch out. So enough about the bad parents in this show. Let's talk about the good parent, Joyce Byers, right?
Joyce Byers. I love Joyce.
The commando parent. I mean, she is just like rolling up her sleeves towards the end when they're just like, what'd she say? She's just like, we're going to go out there and we're going to kill this thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I want is I just want to kill this thing. Okay, let's do it. You know, that was, she's so good.
This is one of the things I love about Joyce is I had a friend who wrote this rant on Facebook last year about Joyce that I like so vehemently was opposed to, and that she was talking about Joyce as like the stereotypical hysterical woman and all that kind of things. And I'm like, on the surface, yes, stereotypical hysterical woman, right? But that's what's so great about Joyce is that it shows that like, hey, maybe there's a reason. Why women are like this. Like, listen to her. Like, the entire time she's right. She's been right with every step of this road. And you have, like, you know, once he kind of experienced it, like, Hopper starts believing her and is along for this ride with her. And, you know, all these, like, kids are kind of on her level and everything. But she is, you know, she's fighting for her child. And she is trusting her instincts, you know, saying like these kinds of ways that women interact with the world. Like, maybe there's something to that emotional intuition as opposed to this idea that everything has to be like logical, fact-based, whatever. I feel like she's really a character who validates the woman's experience in the world. And I love that about her. You know, I'm like, yeah, scream, cry, do what you need to do and like get it done, because she does get it done constantly.
She's not hysterical about everything either. She's just, she's just passionate and she knows what she knows. And it's in the scene in season one, Hopper's like, well, 99% of the time they're at a friend's house. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, what about 1%? And she wouldn't be yelling and screaming about the 1% if she didn't feel like her child literally was in that 1%.
She was part of Occupy Wall Street.
Yay, I wasn't trying to make that joke.
So my favorite Joyce thing is she is so that mama bear this season, right? That trope of like, the mama's going to come in and kick some ass. Mm-hmm. And I hate that mama bear trope in so many ways, because it's almost always like, and then when the men aren't around, a woman can stand up for herself.
Right. Yeah.
And so one of my favorite scenes is when they're doing the exorcism of Will and they've got the heaters on him.
Oh my God.
And Jonathan can't handle it. And Jonathan keeps freaking out. I can't do this. I can't do this. And then she's the one that's like, shut up, sit down. I got this.
Yeah.
Crank it up to 11.
And then Nancy, who is like just a BAMF all the time. Nancy is savage and comes in with the hot poker and gets him. You know, wakes them up or whatever. You're like, dude, these girls do what it takes.
I mean, but we've always known that about Jonathan, because even in Nancy, and then when the scene where like they're in the house and he's like looking at Jonathan like, hey, can you use this? And he's like,
and she's like, I can do it.
Yeah. And I was like, yes, Nancy, get it, girl.
Yeah. Jonathan is constantly being emasculated in a way that doesn't like value masculinity like that. It's like, who cares? No, the woman's just better at that. And that's fine.
Yep. 100%. I love it.
But yeah, I agree with everything for Joyce. I just want to throw my 2 cents in that.
All right, we've been talking for a long time. Any plot points you guys want to draw?
There was a plot?
I'm going to give a hot take.
Okay.
Yeah.
The plot of Stranger Things season one and Stranger Things season two are not that great. And I loved both shows. And I was wrapped and I was like cliffhanger and everything. But we just spent an hour talking about just the characters.
Right.
And we got a lot of plot points in there. But I don't know that plot is their strong suit. It's not bad, but they're not like over the top. I don't want to be like, okay, let's get into in episode 4 and then this and then this. Like, those characters are really what make this show.
I agree. And that's what like makes me watch things. Like, this constantly drives everyone crazy, but the reason I watch any like movie or TV show or anything is about the characters in it. And if you ask me a plot point later on, like, oh, in this episode when this happened, like if I hadn't watched this today and you asked me about any given episode, I could not tell you anything. And that's with everything across the board. I don't remember plots and things, but I remember how I felt and I remember the characters. And so I think you're right. Like, I don't know that Stranger Things has the strongest plot. I think it's serviceable. I think it works to move it along. And I'm never sitting there like, why am I doing this? Aside maybe from our bottle episode there. But like, I don't know that that is really what the strength of the show is.
The pendulum swings two ways for like if Stranger Things was a movie, like a feature length film versus this long form, you know, 8-hour film. If it was a movie, they would have to rely probably more on plot, and they wouldn't get all this great character development. But since they are on this, you know, 8-hour time frame, you know, they're going to blow up all of these relationships. They have all the time in the world to do the things that they can't do in a movie where you have to keep everyone's attention for the 2 hours and make it pow, pow, pow. I mean, I think that's kind of where they're going is the story is a simple story and they get the story from A to B and they get it, but the characters move so much further in so many different ways than kind of, you know, the linear story that they are in. So
are we ready for Stranger Things season 3 predictions?
Sure.
I'm going to start this. There was an interesting fan theory out there, and it's going to take a little walking, not much, but, and I think it had a little bit more credit in season, if you just have only seen season 1, where Jim Hopper gets taken away by in the black car, and he's going to do maybe some seedy stuff for the government. If you remember back to the film Predator, they go out into the jungle to find one of the missing commandos whose name was Jim Hopper. So there is a fan theory that Jim ends up getting caught up in all this stuff with the government, and they end up sending him out into a jungle somewhere eventually. Unfortunately, he dies there, but that's why I'm not going to give too much credit to it, because Jim will live forever.
What
a horrible theory.
I don't know. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Why would you?
Another 80s movie with Jim Hopper. It fits the timeline.
Does fit the timeline.
But we don't need to kill him off.
I don't like it.
All right, here's what I want from season 3. And this sounds horrible.
Oh, geez.
Someone needs to die.
I mean, you're right.
It's we're getting too, they're too safe.
This is, Jason, you're on my level, because this is like, I constantly say this about things. When I write things, people die. When I watch things, I'm like, you can only go so far. This is my problem with Harry Potter, that the three main people who are constantly in these deadly situations manage to survive this entire arc. I'm like, that's impossible. There's no way. So I think you're right. Somebody, they need to sacrifice someone who's not peripheral, like Bob. They need to actually break our hearts and kill someone who's very close to happening here.
I think it's got to be Dustin.
Because
here's the deal. Will's been through enough. If the theme for each season is we just beat up on Will, like, come on.
Yeah.
Dustin's the one we love the most. And if it's Lucas, it's like, hey, we gave him, look, this black character
finally
got an arc.
Yeah, no, you can't kill Lucas. Lucas is safe.
We just wanted him to have an arc so that we could kill him off. And also, we all know who dies first, right, guys? Mike is kind of a meaningless character because he's the audience surrogate. Like, we don't really care about him.
Right.
I care about Mike.
And other than those four, it gets peripheral.
I didn't think Will was going to make it to the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, like, you have Will in, like, the center of all the stuff happening to him, so it would make sense for him to kick the bucket.
I don't remember the actor's name that plays Will, but holy crap. That kid had to do some insane acting.
Yeah, he went from being, like, not there in the first season to acting his ass off in this one.
Yeah. Yep. Holy moly. I think in season three, there's going to be a lot more time spent in the Upside Down. I thought that that was going to happen this season. I thought that was going to happen this season a little bit more, like, you know, back and forth. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a lot. I would have liked to see more of that. But so, and that whole last scene where they tip everything upside down and you see the monster still there. And
yeah, that's my thought was I was like, is the Upside Down coming to the right side up?
I don't know. So, the way I read it is. That they tried to do that and it failed. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like more like taking the ring back to Mordor that needs to happen. Mm. Something's going to happen and they're going to need to go in and just take care of this once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it'll be an Eleven and Mike kind of like Bonnie and Clyde suicide mission into the Upside Down. that would be pretty rad. Or just more of an actual Bonnie and Clyde where they go rob banks in the right side up and then just go hide it in the Upside Down. I don't know.
that's
terrible. But
if that's what happens,
season three is just going to be a romp, you know?
Yeah,
just a lot of fun.
I don't know if this like thing is sort of like a mothership sort of deal or whatever, though. So it could have kind of an Independence Day vibe on it. Like we saw this group of these small things that we saw hatch and grow into what was attacking everybody in this, and now we have this like giant spidery whatchamacavir thing that like who knows what else it has hatched. Like maybe we just saw the tip of the iceberg right here, and now there's really like this is going to be all of this stuff coming out of the upside down and like wreaking havoc on the regular world.
Also, I still don't know why Will was the chosen one. Like, I still don't. The plot kind of breaks down, like, because he got taken by the Demogorgon in the first season.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
But he wasn't eaten by the Demogorgon. He was taken. He wasn't eaten. Everything else that we've seen, like, oh, you get caught by the Demogorgon.
Well, but Barb was also, like, sort of hooked up to the same, like, system or whatever he was of, like, the things and the leechy things. So I feel like it's more of like a connection that comes through being down there than him being chosen per se.
I think it was the infection. It was the thing that
infection
because it got him after it got Barb, even though it brought him into the upside down first. You remember he was able to hide and do these things that Barb wasn't able to do. That's why Barb was dead, and he was just infected right at the end.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe Will will end up being the hero. Will be our hobbit do some pretty cool stuff in season three.
I got one last question to get us out of here, Anna.
Okay.
Yeah.
What show, music, moment, whatever, do we need our nostalgia fix filled for? Like, can they find a way to work the labyrinth into?
Ooh.
No, God, I hope not.
Oh, screw you, Kristen.
Yeah, we need some Bowie Bulge.
Perfect Strangers.
Oh, yes.
That's it. Always, because
just watch The Leftovers.
I already did. That's part of. I watched
That's all we need.
The Leftovers, and then one of the Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors ends on the theme song "Perfect Strangers," and so now I just think like you cannot do '80s nostalgia without "Perfect Strangers." I want to see some Balky. Even you know what? You don't even need the theme. Just bring Bronson Pinchot in as a character.
Yep.
And
yes, Corson Larry.
Yes.
Yeah, this season did such a good job. Like they covered they covered so many different things, and they even went outside of the 80s, so it's just like I feel pretty fulfilled at this point. I'm pretty like the 80s meter is on full for me, so I don't know. I mean, what trope haven't we hit yet?
80s hip-hop.
Oh, 80s hip hop.
I need some Digital Underground. Somebody get some in a Burger King bathroom.
Some B-boys.
Humpty. Pronounced with an
umpty. With an umpty.
Yeah. I'm in for that. Kristen?
Am I in for Humpty? Is that what you're asking?
Your answer to the question of the 80s.
Oh.
Kristen, what we all want to know is, are you in for Humpty?
Are you in for Humpty?
Always.
That's the...
Always, first of all.
Okay,
that's
good.
That's always the answer.
That's important.
I don't know. I mean,
Wow.
I can't think of anything.
Did she die?
While she thinks, I want to make DTH a thing. Down to Humpty.
Down to Humpty. Mm. I like that. It's a blend of like 80s nostalgia and current terminology.
It's Zennial AF.
Zennial AF, for sure. All right, Kristen, any thoughts before we go?
Installed?
No, I don't think I do. I was thinking about it.
You're fulfilled.
I mean, the only movie that I like really love that would just wouldn't make sense to like do a nod to it, just as in like, it just would be weird, I feel like. So
what is it?
What is it?
So I would like really love like some sort of like, I want my $2
yes.
like, in the background oh, or something. Yeah.
A little Better Off Dead.
Oh.
Just a French exchange student. That's all we need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Or, yeah.
That's great. I feel good about that, Laddie. I don't know why you were timid about that.
It just because it seems like, it seems sort of like.
Did she freeze? Yeah.
I hope she freezes like that forever. That face.
All right, then, folks, what do you think?
I think that's it. I guess the only other thing you could say about season three, 80s nostalgia, is who's going to be the 80s star that guest stars in season three?
I said Bronson Pinchot.
Bronson Pinchot.
That's right.
Yeah. Valky Vartokomis.
There's only one answer.
Yeah. Yes, John Cusack.
Oh.
Ooh, I like
John
it.
Cusack. I'm in for that as well. Or Joan. John or Joan.
Oh, any Cusack.
John Cusack.
Yeah, any Cusack is fine by me.
That actually probably has a chance of actually happening. You got two for one there. All right. Well, with that, we're going to close this Stranger Think down and shove everything back down that hole underneath Hawkins where it belongs. But we loved it. We can't get enough of it. We'll probably all rewatch it again. So if you guys have any questions, feel free to tweet at us at Overthink on Twitter or visit our website, overthinkpod.com. Mm, insert.
Yeah. One of those two.
Overthink.
I've heard it both ways.
Overthinkpod.com. Overthinkpod.com.
Twitter at Overthink. Probably at Overthinkpod.
Wow.
I've heard it both ways. I love that.
Tell us some of your favorite moments from Stranger Things. We'd love to hear them. We could probably talk about this for days and days and days. But for now, this is going to end this one. And subscribe to our feed, and you'll get lots of great podcasts coming your way. So thanks, Corrigan, Kristen, and Jason for joining us today. And we'll talk to y'all next time. See ya.
Bye.
And until next time,
shove it down your Hawkins hole.